This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
ESPN's NBA insider on SportsCenter talking about the breaking news from about 24 hours ago at this point that Alex Rodriguez, former Major League Baseball All-Star and signer of, for a long time, the most expensive contract in sports before eventually surpassed by Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, others, is going to now be a franchise owner. A-Rod is obviously incredibly wealthy from his baseball earnings, has made a ton of money of endorsements, and is now going to invest that into team ownership. And he is far from the first at this point. As I'm sure you know and you'll remember, Michael Jordan is an owner of, or is the controlling owner of, the Charlotte Hornets. LeBron James just about a month ago bought into the Fenway Group, which owns the Boston Red Sox. And even the WNBA, Rene Montgomery went from WNBA player to WNBA owner within the course of a couple of months. She sat out the wobble last year. She was an active player at the start of 2020, sat out the wobble to protest social justice, or protest for social justice, and figure out what she wanted to do with her life to have a bigger impact. And part of that was joining the ownership group that bought the Atlanta Dream from former U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler. Grant Hill is a part owner of the Atlanta Hawks. So why am I mentioning all this? And what is the significance? Well, sports have been defined. And by the way, before I dive into this fully, I just heard a Ron Rivera clip from the Rich Eisen show in the break that nearly made me blow a gasket, and I need to talk about it. So we're going to do that in 10 minutes. So Ron Rivera not understanding analytics. Oh, 9 minutes. But sports, for a large majority of their history, have been defined by players versus owners. Of course, the competition on the field is what a lot of people think of when they think of sports, for good reason. Like, those are the moments we remember. But so many major inflection points in sports are shaped by the relationship between the owners and the players. You go back to the 1960s in the NBA, where they almost canceled an All-Star game. There was a boycott until there was an agreement that, yes, you would be, like, the NBA Players Union would be recognized. And that obviously starts that era of better compensation, better benefits, better working conditions for the players, just as any of us who may be a part of a union. I'm not currently part of, but have been in the past, a part of SAG-AFTRA. Obviously, there's a ton of unions around here, for whether it's electricians or whatever, all around the country. And it's actually something that could be coming back in larger realm, unionization for workers around the country, to try to improve the compensation and working rights for all of us. And that's all this is. And in baseball in particular, there's a very strong union. Obviously, free agency was ultimately created by after a push from the union. We see work stoppages, which can change the trajectory and of sports. And all of these things in the collective bargaining agreements of all these sports shape how teams are built, which shape, again, the action on the floor, how players move. The reality of the fact that players are essentially commodities that can be traded. This became a huge story just a couple of weeks ago when J.J. Redick was like, I got promised this by New Orleans front office. And even though, like, I disagree with him, I understand his point that, like, I don't think the Pelicans should have done something that wasn't as good for their team because they're a business trying to run by their best interests, and that's the world that we live in. You sign the contract, and you're in a work setup that says you can be traded. Upend your life. Go play basketball for another team. And it's part of it. And it would be terrible. Like, I would hate, like, if CK could trade me without my permission, could trade me to pick another Odyssey station, 610 Sports in Houston. Like, I'd be like, no, I don't want to move to Houston. All due respect to Houston. I don't want to move to Houston. I'm good here. Sorry, hey, we're trading you to 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Where's the Joakim Noah clip? Nobody goes to vacation in Cleveland. I actually love Cleveland. But would I want to live there compared to here? No. That's why I live here. So I wonder, as more athletes get into ownership, how these dynamics change. Because one of two things can happen. You could see owners being more open to things that players want because they themselves were players. If you are the Major League Baseball Players Association and you can get in the ear of LeBron James, king of player empowerment, and be like, yo, you need to talk to the owner, or the majority owners at the Red Sox, about this thing that we want because it's good for player empowerment. LeBron now has to decide, like, am I going to maybe go against my bottom line, purely business self-interest as an owner, or am I going to live up to my values and my ethos of player empowerment? If you're Alex Rodriguez, and, you know, he seems to have a much bigger role in this, and if he is someone who is on the NBA's board of governors and is in these meetings, and he's like, hey, if I was a player, which I have experience being in a different sport, this is what I want. And he and Michael Jordan are now being like, yeah, from a player's perspective, I get this. Now, that doesn't always happen. Like, Michael Jordan's been a pretty run-of-the-mill NBA owner. Like, he's done things that other owners do that are really silly and not always the best thing for the players. He's also done some great stuff down in Charlotte. Like, typically, it's a mixed bag. It's how much are you willing to invest in winning? And when I say invest, I mean literally put in and take away from your bottom line. So I think this is a trend that is only going to increase. It is a trend that is going to become a bigger part of the conversation because never before were athletes earning enough where if they sign a couple contracts, they're into the $500, $600 million in career earnings. And I know after taxes, it's quote-unquote only $300 million. But, like, if you're Stephen Curry and you signed a six-year, $200 million contract and you're making God knows how much from Under Armour, like, Steph's probably going to be a billionaire at some point. LeBron is a billionaire. Tiger Woods is a billionaire. Michael Jordan is a billionaire. Mike Trout, you know, on his baseball alone, is going to be in the $400 to $500 million range by the time it's all said and done, if not more. So if these players then go, I want to be the owner, how does it go? And I don't know, but I would like to think that it becomes a little bit more harmonious. Or do you have a bunch of, like, what essentially is the, I'll call the Charles Barkley theory of, oh, it was better back in my day, these young kids, these whippersnappers, they need to suck it up. Could go either way, but it's a trend worth watching. Also worth watching, Ron Rivera's decision-making. He said something in a radio interview this week that has me ready to blow my top. And I'm not a blow-my-top-on-the-radio kind of guy. I try to be pretty even keel. I try to do topics that I think are a little more highbrow. And I guess in some ways I'm going to defend analytics. But I'm going to try to explain to Ron Rivera how analytics work next on The Fan, because good Lord, that man does not get it. Craig Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan. I have 10 minutes to explain analytics to Ron Rivera, and then we take a commercial break, and then we come back, and Samantha Pell edumacates us on the Washington Capitals hockey team. So, I was scrolling the Twitters through the break at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, and I just felt as I listened to this clip on Warren Sharp's Twitter, Warren Sharp, very smart football analyst, I felt my blood pressure rising, and I was like, we got to talk about this. We're going to do it, and this is the clip from the Rich Eisen Show of the Washington football team's head coach, Ron Rivera, talking about analytics.
I've had situations where when we've gone for it with the analytics, and it didn't happen out, and I've been told, hey, that's okay. You did what the analytics said, and to me, I struggle with that because if I did what analytics said, and it says 9 times out of 10 you're going to complete it, there's that 1 time out of 10 you don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so how do you know if you're going to be that 1 time out of 10 that isn't successful? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if there is no guarantee, you can tell me all you want, oh, that it's 99%. Hey, that's good. Yeah, but what if you're that 1%? What if that 1 time it doesn't work? Nobody talks about that until it happens.
It's called math. It's called probabilities. It's called choosing the best possible outcome. If I told you that there is a jar of jelly beans and that 9 out of 10 times you're going to get a regular jelly bean, but 1 out of 10 you're going to get a jelly bean filled with cyanide, you know what you'd probably do? Not eat the jelly beans if that were an option. But in football, not doing something is not an option. This isn't a game of fake cyanide jelly beans. Hey, would you do it for $1 billion? No. No, I wouldn't. Because 10% of the time, I'm going to eat a jelly bean filled with cyanide, and I'm going to be dead. But in a football game, if it says on 4th and 1, that 65% of the time, I increase my chance of winning if I go for it, then you know what I'm going to do? Go for it. Because the option is either go for it or don't. And if I don't, you want to know what the math says there? That 65% of the time, I'm going to lose more often than not. What I don't get about these coaches who don't get analytics is what they don't get. And I'm not saying that you 100% blindly listen to analytics on a grand scale with no context. I know Sean McVay used to talk about this all the time. And he's 100%, there's an analytic for you, right. If the analytics say on 4th and 1, and I'm making up these numbers, on 4th and 1 that I'm going to get it 65% of the time and that my win probability goes up if I get it by X percent, but my starting left guard is out and now I picked the wrong coach because Sean McVay has Aaron Donald on his team, but my starting left guard is out. Let's go back to when Sean was the offensive coordinator here and we're facing the Rams and Aaron Donald. And I've seen on 4 straight plays that Aaron Donald is whipping the behind of my backup left guard. Then guess what? That changes the analytics. Your success rate is no longer the NFL average of 65%. You're the reason it's not higher. That's how analytics work. That doesn't mean the analytics are wrong. It's providing context to numbers. So when Ron Rivera says, nobody ever talks about the 1 time, yeah, they do. They do. It's part of the data set. If we have 100 things as an example, and we say 99 times that it works, we can evaluate why the 1 didn't. But it doesn't mean that you should side with the 1 over the 99, because in the history of the league, coaches have been either misinformed not understanding the actual risk that they are undertaking and the consequences of their decisions, or cowards going with the conservative, non-aggressive, at least we won't lose and they'll be able to point to this decision, decision. But the reality is, we're smarter than that now. The people analyzing the game know the data. And if you choose to ignore it, then we're going to look at you and go, hey, when you decided to punt on fourth down and one at the 50 with 6 minutes to go, your chances of winning go down tremendously. You should have gone for it. We do point to that decision and go, yeah, you went with the one, and that was wrong. We just know better now. And it's one thing to like have a gut instinct, or for the tradition to be, or I don't even think it categorizes as tradition because there's no ceremony about it. Conventional wisdom to be wrong, but you adapt and you evolve as time goes on. It's the same people who bash, and this is a larger group, and even some of the same people who will defend analytics love to bash to bash win probability. I go on ESPN.com and it said they had a 99% chance to win, and then they blew it. That win probability statistic is trash. No, it's not. What made the comeback or the upset so remarkable was it was one of the three times in 1,000 at a 99.7 win probability that it happened. If it was 100%, then it would have been impossible. But it wasn't impossible. It was improbable. And so for all the times that a team is up 8-3 in the ninth inning, and that game gets closed out, you don't think twice about it. Guess what? That was the 99. You just don't think about it except for when it's the one. And that recency bias, that improbability bias in terms of narrative, doesn't make the math wrong. And so if you're an NFL head coach, should you consider more than league average probability? Yeah, you should have data on your own team and how you do in that situation. You should understand that you might be more likely to go against whatever the league average or your team average data is based off of personnel. If you're the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, your data is going to look a little different than if Mahomes gets hurt. Now, the AFC title game suggests differently. You know, their backup comes in, runs around, and seals it, and they go to the Super Bowl. Cool. But, like, the data's different. Who was that? Was it Chad Henne? Was that who came into that game? The Chad Henne data is different for Andy Reid than the Patrick Mahomes data, and that's a factor. If it's third and or it's 4th and 12, and I'm right on that punt line, we're like, hey, if I've got Mahomes, maybe I do something crazy. And if it's Chad Henne, I'm like, you know what? We're going to try to get the ball back in a better situation here with 8 minutes to go down a score at the plus 45. We'll try to pin him deep and go there. Whereas Mahomes, it's like, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Run around, good things happen. Getting 12 yards with Patrick Mahomes is different than any other quarterback in the league. That's not going against analytics. That is contextualizing analytics to make a smarter decision. It never means the math is wrong. And to hear an NFL coach in 2021 go, I don't know how this 99-1 works, gives me anxiety. That's the end of the analytics rant. Sam Pell, She's going to talk about the Washington Capitals next. I'm Craig Hoffman with you on The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan, your home for the Washington Capitals on the radio. And with that, we head out to the BetQL guest line. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's where we find my friend Sam Pell. Sam, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing well, doing well. Sam, of course, on the beat for the Washington Post covering the Capitals, who squeaked by the Buffalo Sabres yesterday. What did you expect going into that game, as the Capitals have been stumbling as of late and the Sabres are the worst team in the NHL, objectively speaking? What did the Capitals show in that game to pull out a victory?
Yeah, you know, it definitely was a response game. You know, after the 4-2 loss to Boston a couple nights before, the Capitals really wanted to focus on getting a fast start. And, you know, they did that. They got up 2-0 early. They also got a 3-1 lead. And then it just seemed like the Sabres kind of always hung in there. They had really good response goals. But I think overall, Peter Laviolette was happier, with the first period. He was kind of happier overall with their effort. He thought that his team has had good energy the last couple of nights. We just needed to kind of carry it through against the Sabres. So I would say mainly positives from that Buffalo trip. And then now, of course, they're in Boston tonight. They'll face the Bruins again for the sixth time this season. So it'll be interesting when those guys clash again tonight.
Washington right now tied atop the East Division with the Islanders. But if you look at the goal differential for Washington versus New York, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Carolina, like all those teams I just mentioned, Toronto, Winnipeg, and then in the West, Colorado and Vegas, like all those teams are 25 and above goal differential and seem to have separated themselves in that category. And then there's like another group of teams that are kind of in the teens. And despite the fact that Washington is on top of the East, they're only plus 13. Which group of teams do you think the Capitals belongs in?
Yeah, you know, I think the Capitals, it's hard because the East is such a tough division right now. Like some of the teams you talked about, and like an Islanders is obviously a very different team than a Tampa, just in style-wise and how they play. New York is very, you know, defensively sound and heavy. Tampa is playing in a division where they're a little bit more offensively focused with the Carolina and, you know, Florida. And then you look in the North with Toronto, and that's a very offensively heavy league in the North Division. So I think it's hard to kind of just base off of goal differential, but definitely you could say that the Capitals haven't had maybe their top game offensively, I would say, in the last couple of weeks. They got shut out for the first time this season, you know, on the island against the Islanders in a pretty big matchup. So I would say maybe that's something to look at moving forward. But again, they're tied for first place in the East. They're exactly where they want to be, a month-ish before the playoffs. It's just about finding their full 60, 100% complete game.
Around the league and around all leagues, fans are starting to come back into the arenas. How has that changed the energy? And do you expect home ice advantage to start becoming, I would say, a bigger factor as opposed to, you know, whether you're home or away? Like, obviously, sleeping in your own bed versus not, there's that. But, you're playing in an empty arena no matter where you are.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, even just a little bit of fans makes a really big difference, I think, just from being in some of these away arenas where there are fans, probably like 2,000 to 3,000. I think it really does make a difference compared to Capital One Arena now, which is, you know, dead silent. They kind of have that little fan noise trickling in from the speakers, but I think it makes a difference. I think it's an energy thing. I think for a lot of guys, they are very emotional when they play, and so they feed off of any type of energy they can get, and right now it's only them and the ice. So I definitely think it'll come into play. I think it'll be really interesting in places like Carolina, where they could technically go up to 50% capacity right now, according to the state. So I think some of those might be interesting moving forward, but I think any fans are good for the league.
What is the Capitals' plan for that? I think it's coming, right?
It is coming. So it was approved. Fans are officially approved back at Capital One Arena for Caps and Wizards games. There's not a set return date yet. The Capitals come back from their road trip tonight after Boston. So they play two home games this week on Tuesday and Thursday, but there's no official ruling of fans are going to be let in as soon as Tuesday or Thursday yet, but when it is, it's 10%, about 2,100 fans.
coming down the stretch of this regular season, like, what are the, if you could create like a three-item checklist that you want to see in the final month, final game, less than a month away at this point of the regular season, Saturday, May 8th, you finish with two against Philadelphia at home. What are the things that need to be shored up for this team to feel good about where they are going into the playoffs?
Yeah, definitely the first one I would say is very confident in their goalie situation, whether that's acquiring a goalie at the trade deadline, which is tomorrow at 3 p.m. on Monday, or it's picking one of these two young goaltenders in Ilya Samsonov or Vitek Vanacek as the number one headed into the postseason. You know, right now they're trading off starts. We'll see who gets the start tonight in Boston. But I think the Caps do need to figure that out and kind of shore things up there. I think second, the defense has played really, really well this season, and it just seems like it maybe in the last 2 to 3 weeks it's gone a little bit downhill, not totally all together. So I would say definitely the defense getting back on track, you know, get Brendan Dillon, John Carlson, you know, Orlov, Schultz, just all working together once again. And I would say the third is probably, like we talked about earlier in the show, just offense. Scoring more goals, kind of getting back into that rhythm. I think a lot of people would love to see Jacob Verana kind of get back to his early fast start. Same with Tom Wilson. You already know Alex Ovechkin's going to score goals, but they're definitely going to need him down the stretch.
Last question for Sam Pell. She mentioned the trade deadline tomorrow, 3 p.m. What do we expect? You mentioned the goaltender possibility. Anything else that we should keep an eye on for the Caps?
You know, I definitely think goaltending is the number one thing for the Caps. You know, Brian McClellan has been known for trading for a defenseman. He's done that for the last 6 years. You know, the Caps are pretty packed defensively. I don't foresee that, but never say no with Brian McClellan. I think the Caps have also pretty much talked about acquiring, you know, a center or a forward. I think we saw with Lars Eller out, with, you know, Kuznetsov out for a bit, it seemed like center depth is maybe one of the weaknesses that could come into play in the playoffs. You always want to have guys who can step in case of injury, and maybe the Caps go out and kind of find a guy there. But it's a really tough market this year, obviously, with COVID, you know, the pandemic, just kind of figuring out logistics for everything. So you've already seen a couple big trades go down in the division, and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Game 42 of 56 today. Make sure you're following her on Twitter for the latest updates, at Samantha J. Pell. Sam Pell of The Washington Post. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Always. Thanks so much.
See you, Sam. Darris, I have a question for you, non-Caps related. Towards the end of that phone call with Sam, I saw the hotline ring, and it said U.S. government. Am I in trouble?
I got scared for my own life there for a second, but no, it was just a spam call that happened to have our hotline number. So you're good.
So it wasn't the U.S. government.
It was not the U.S. government. It said something about a $800 charge via Amazon Prime being debited from our account.
Oh.
Yeah. Not sure who that was directed to.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Wasn't me.
Probably
I didn't
wasn't me.
Purchase. No.
I mean, I'll check my Amazon account, but I don't think that was me. I do find it funny. I still get all of the Concur, which is our, like, what's it called? Expense system. Like, I get all the notices, and maybe everyone in the company gets them. I still get all of those because I used to have an account, and it's like, you should close, you know, if you're not doing this, close your account, blah, blah. I'm like, my account's been closed for a year and a half. I have no charges. I have no nothing. We squared all that away. I did all my expense reports. It was like a tradition. All of us would do them in the media room together. It's like, oh yeah, where do we go? Oh yeah. Okay. Where's that receipt? Got it. Typically, JP was at least two trips behind. That was fun. Wait, you're still doing Tampa? So, yeah. It's a real good time to be doing expenses. So we'll check our Amazon account and get right back to everybody. Coming up to close the show, we do this on the regular. It's called Real Things Real People Said Into Real Microphones. The loss of a hip-hop legend, plus a moment to remember, brought to you by Stephen Curry. That is how we close the show after we check our Amazon account here on the phone. Real things, real people said into real microphones coming up in just a little bit. Craig Hoffman wrapping up the show with you on The Fan. Thanks to all of today's guests. 9:30, we had Eric Edholm. Danny Ruye was at 10. Eric was talking NFL draft. Danny, he was talking the NFL draft of about 2042, his 7-year-old's football game. But also, he talked about the Nationals. Emily Olsen talking soccer at 10:30. And then we just had Sam Pell on the Caps. I give you all of those names and all of those times to remind you that if you go to the Odyssey app, you can rewind. Just go click, 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 click. Go back in the show. And ta-da. You are able to listen to any of those interviews, any segment. Perhaps you want to hear me yammer about the Wizards, like I did at 9:15, or the potential for an Olympic boycott in China in 2022 at 10:15. You can do all that on the Odyssey app. That's also where you can find all of our podcasts. I was on with B. Mitch on Thursday. If you missed any of that show, it was a very, very fun time. You can go back and listen on the B. Mitch and Finley feed, or this show will be on the Overtime feed a little bit later. Also, thanks to Darius for working on the weekend. How'd you get roped into this, by the way? Just because we're a little short-staffed right now?
Yeah, a little short-staffed right now.
Good team player.
Some folks out. And yeah, I'm just I'm the guy that says yes.
That is a good person to be in radio.
I also had some short days this week because we had a lot of 4 o'clock Nats games.
So that is true. That is true.
I think it was process of elimination where it's like, oh, he didn't actually work a full week this week.
Yeah, he's got some hours that we can be like, yeah, if you want to do your full-time job, you're going to have to do the full-time. Darius, get in here. I appreciate you. It's always good working with you. Good to see you on a Sunday morning. So we were talking with Peter Rosenberg on Thursday, which we always, or B. Mitch and Finley always do. They always have him 1:30 on Thursdays. And Peter's a guy I've known for a long time. Actually, here, before we play this clip, I will tell you the time I met Peter, because it's actually a pretty funny story. And so this is 2015, because it was right before I took the beat job at 980, right before I moved from Dallas to D.C. And I went on my own dime to NBA Summer League, because at the time I was doing a ton of NBA stuff, and it was basically like, look, if you want to be involved in NBA anything, you need to be at Summer League. It's where the whole league is. So I bought a trip to Vegas. It was borderline fiscally irresponsible, not in the way that most people going to Vegas is. It's just because I was making no money in Dallas, but I was like, this is an investment in me. I didn't go out like at all. I was like, I'm going to get a room. I'm going to get this cheap flight. And man, it was a cheap flight. It was one of the discount airlines that I will absolutely never fly again. I remember my flight home was I flew out on one of the major airlines, and it was one that I had flown a couple times for work. And so I had some miles built up. And I actually got upgraded to first class. It was the first time I ever got upgraded to first class. I don't know how. I don't know why. It was fairly random. Like, as I got on the beat job, I would get upgraded all the time because, like, I flew very regularly and had status. At this point, I did not, and I just randomly got upgraded to first class. So I fly first class from Dallas to Vegas. And then on the way back, I'm on a discount airline next to a 2-year-old and a seat that doesn't recline. So that was a different trip. But on the flight out there, I had listened to SVP and Russillo on ESPN Radio, and Peter had filled in for Scott that day. And so I listened to Peter Rosenberg's voice without knowing anything about what he looked like for 2.5 hours on this flight. And so I'm sitting there courtside in, Thomas and Mack Arena in Vegas at Summer League, and I'm with Marcus Smart's agent. And I think Marcus might have been there too. Marcus was a Dallas guy who I'd interviewed a couple times. And so I'm sitting there with his agent and this other guy who I have no idea who he is, but he like has a little bit of an aura about him. I'm like, this dude seems like a big deal. And then he starts talking. I'm like, God, I know this guy. I don't know who he is, but I know him. He sounds so familiar. And it was Peter. And finally, it hit me, and I was like, I know who you are. And so I also knew from listening to the show that he was a huge Washington football fan. And I basically had the offer in hand, or I knew it was coming within the week, of the Washington football beat job for 980. And so I'm like, hey, I know I don't know you, but can I ask you something? I'm about to get offered this job. Like, what should I do? And talk to Peter. I wind up taking the job. Turns out to be a little bit of a roller coaster with that station at the time. Hey, look, now we're all one big family. Everything worked out. But that was my first time ever meeting Peter, and he was a guy that was always good to me. When I needed like a good fan perspective on Washington football stuff to try to center myself on the beat and not be just like super reporter guy, he was a guy to reach out to and be like, yo, what do you think of this? So anyway, it was great catching up with Peter on Thursday. And little did we know, as we were talking, and B. Mitch ultimately asked Peter about DMX, as DMX had obviously really bad health issue and ultimately winds up passing a day later. We didn't know that he was going to pass. Things were dire, but B. Mitch, knowing that DMX was really sick and that it, unfortunately this was something that was possible, asked Peter about DMX. And I thought that was where we could start Real Things, Real People Said in Real Microphones, because I thought Peter's perspective as someone who's covered hip hop like he has for a decade was great.
DMX is such an iconic hip hop character. I mean, he is I'm sure, you know, he's still fighting for his life, and I am sure that people are already trying to figure out how to tell the ultimate DMX documentary. Because, I mean, you talk about a story with layers to it. I mean, DMX is, his life is both amazing and tragic simultaneously from beginning to end. I mean, he's dealt with unbelievable tragedy his whole life, unbelievable heights, unbelievable lows. And then musically, you know, he's just one of these guys who these days in hip hop, and there's a lot of great artists out right now. And in fact, I'm dropping a new single tomorrow featuring Westside Gunn called Stain. Westside Gunn's a phenomenal artist out of Buffalo, but there's a lot of great artists, but so many are playing the part of rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, you remember the ones who are the authentic article. And, you know, that's what I said the other day when Ghostface and Raekwon had their verses. You're talking about two guys who are not dressing up as rappers. They are the authentic article. It's how I felt about ODB, and it's how I feel about DMX. For his genius, for his shortcomings, for everything he is the authentic, genuine article, and he would be an amazing story.
Peter Rosenberg on B. Mitch and Finley on DMX from Thursday. Unfortunately, obviously, less than 24 hours later, DMX passed at the age of 50. I've been listening, as I'm sure many of you have, to a ton of his music over the last couple of days, and just an incredible artist who delivered every single time. Just the hype, the energy. There's just a certain thing that he could get because of that voice that is so iconic. And as Peter said, an authentic lived life experience as well that is both useful in making the art that he did and tragic at the same time. And so there is glory and there is pain. And I thought Peter captured that really well. If you want more from what Peter had to say in general on a bunch of stuff, check the podcast on the Odyssey app from B. Mitch and Finley on Thursday, the final hour of the show. On a much lighter note, actually, I haven't heard this yet, but I've seen it come through my Twitter timeline about seven times this morning, so I figured it was good to pull. There's a moment between the public address announcer of the Golden State Warriors and NBA MVP and future Hall of Famer Stephen Curry. Apparently, this is very nice. I'm hoping that it translates in audio form, but this happened, and it seems like a good and uplifting way to end the show.
Just a few seconds ago, Stephen Curry going over to Aaron Showtime Taylor and some very nice words. And then more importantly, when you score 38, normally you're going to be the player of the game and be the interview. But Steph, let's step aside for Aaron Taylor for a second. Tell us, man, you knocked the intros out of the park. What was it like being the PA announcer for the Warriors tonight?
Hey, man, this is... like I keep saying, this is surreal.
Embrace it, because it's a moment.
I love it.
I love it. I mean, we know your story, Aaron. Getting out of San Quentin, developing that relationship with the Warriors, killing it in terms of how you handled all the courtside games with the Warrior executives, and to be out and have served your time and to have this great opportunity and make the most of it. I mean, this is Hollywood, man. This is you just seizing your moment.
No, I worked hard, you know, in 26 years to rehabilitate myself. And in the process of doing that, I just embraced the attitude that I could be more than what I was, you know. And once I embraced the attitude that I could be more than what I was, then it was time for me to tell other people, you can be more than what you think you are.
This is a really incredible story that I wish I actually had done a little bit more homework on beforehand and could have gotten into more. But Aaron Taylor used to be in the San Quentin Federal Penitentiary out in the Bay Area, which is one of the most notorious and like maximum security type prisons. And the Warriors have a longstanding relationship where, as part of the rehabilitation process, a lot of their I think it started when Mark Jackson was there, but Bob Myers, I know their GM, is a huge part of this. And I think Bob is actually technically the team president now. Anyway, like, they would go out there and play like pickup games, the execs, with the prisoners, a select group. And this guy, Aaron Taylor, was a part of that crew. And so he gets out. As he said, he worked really hard to rehabilitate himself. And ultimately, he gets an invitation to be the public address announcer for the night for the Warriors at Chase Center. And Steph Curry shares the spotlight with him after a magnificent performance and a win for the Warriors, that courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area. There's another, if you want more on this, you can read a story in The Athletic by Marcus Thompson, who's a phenomenal writer. And that's a good way you can spend part of your Sunday. You can also spend part of it, at least the next hour, with Byron Kerr, talking Nats with Sam Fortier from The Post, Mark Zuckerman from Masson Sports, and Jorge Castillo from the LA Times, former Washington Post writer, now covers the Dodgers for the Times. So great hour to come with Byron, talking Nats. Can the Nats turn it around? They've lost four in a row. They play 4:00 right here on The Fan later today against the Dodgers. Again, thanks to Darius for running the show. Terrific job as always, sir. Thanks to all the guests. If you missed any part of the show, check the podcast. They're online at thefandc.com or on the Odyssey app. I'll see you Wednesday night for overtime here on The Fan. I'm Craig Hoffman. See you then. Have a wonderful Sunday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.